Welcome to In the Loop with Andrew Travers. Hello, everybody, and welcome to In the Loop, the podcast with Andrew. And today we've got Michael Simmons, who you've heard from before in a previous episode. And today he's actually going to come and talk a little bit more about the topic of anxiety. Hello, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Not too bad. It's one of these things where we're close to Christmas and a little bit of a stress overload for some people going on. And for others, obviously, they're feeling a bit anxious because they've just been put into a higher level of lockdown or sort of more restrictions, shall we say. And for others, their Christmas plans have been ruined a bit because they can't go and see somebody, which obviously is important at this time of year. So from your side, can you just give us a little bit more of an introduction into anxiety, a bit of background, and your thoughts on the topic?
Yeah, so thanks for that. I think your summary was a pretty good summary, and indeed, the atmosphere in the last weeks, at least for me, seems to be a little bit thicker in the confusion, and I would almost say fear as well. Let's start by defining what we're talking about here, about defining anxiety briefly. So the way I'm using the word anxiety here, it's being defined as an ongoing worry or an ongoing fear that something unfortunate might happen in the future. And we tend to feel anxiety as well when we feel that we don't have full control over what might happen. And I'm going to refer to myself now, but I mean the types of symptoms that are typically associated with anxiety, at least for me, a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach, almost like a sickly feeling, which can get quite intense sometimes. And there's also a sense of nervousness about it as well. There may even be other feelings which are attached to the main anxiety, feelings like helplessness, that it's not within our control to do something about the situation, despair, overwhelmed with having to cope with it as well. So behind anxiety, there could be a whole package of different types of symptoms. Now, in a so-called normal time, my assumption here is that we're in anything but a normal time. Feeling some level of anxiety sometimes, I think, is very healthy. You know, so for example, if I've got a project deadline, which is coming up next week, and maybe that project is competing with a bunch of other priorities, it can be very healthy for me to have a little bit of anxiety to stimulate me taking the necessary action to make sure the project is handed in on time. I think what's special about the current environment, though, is first of all, it's the duration of it. I mean, this COVID has been going on for something like roughly 9 months now. And it's also the scale of it as well. There seem to be so many people which are being touched by it in one way or another. And I think for a lot of people, it's about the fear of having basic needs not being met. So basic needs of a stable salary, basic needs of a stable job, basic needs of good health. And then on top of that, I think there are a host of individual needs which are much more fragmented, which are still being unraveled the longer the situation goes on. And I guess in summary here, I think there are important reasons why a number of us are feeling some level of anxiety, even, I would say, people that would consider themselves to be normally resilient. So I think it's totally understandable.
How are we coping with anxiety? Is it something that, you know, we can cope with, or is it because of past problems and other things which creates a level of anxiety? We then just bury them, and of course that could then be a problem later.
Yeah, so there's a lot packaged in your question, and it's a great question. So, you know, obviously the way that we deal with anxiety is very individual. So the way that one person deals with it can be different than another. I am going to make some generalizations here, though, to bring a point forward. As I've mentioned, anxiety, I think, is a healthy mechanism which stimulates us to take action to stop something bad from happening in the future. The issue, though, comes in when we take action and we still feel our system in a high state of alert. But at least in that case, we're aware that there's something there that isn't sitting right with us, and we can make a conscious decision whether to do something about it or not. The other scenario, though, which I think is common, is that we're not aware that the anxiety is there. And we're not aware of it because we intend to avoid the unpleasant feeling. And why not? Because it's unpleasant to carry around with us. And the way that we do this avoiding is, I mean, typically we either soothe our pain or we numb it. So for example, we overconsume alcohol. You know, we reach for the wine when we get back from work, or we listen excessively to music, or we work a lot, or we intellectualize and ruminate a lot. We play computer games, watch TV, we eat, shopping as well. So there's a whole bunch of ways that we do this. Yeah. My own favorite, and this was quite revealing to me, is keeping busy with work. And actually, a number of years ago, I even developed some kind of almost an addiction to a computer game. It's quite interesting looking back and seeing how angry I used to get at that, at the pixels on the screen. But anyway, the point here is it doesn't mean that all of these activities I've mentioned are evil. And in fact, it's a very, you know, some of these are very healthy and useful, like eating, for example, or going shopping. And giving ourselves a bit of what we need now, like listening to music, et cetera, they all help keep us going in everyday life. So it's not about stopping to do these things completely.
So with regards to, obviously, the example you gave there, Michael, you've got people playing computer games far too much, staying up late, not sleeping. For you, what are you seeing or feeling as the issues?
Yeah, well, I think in general, you know, there's a tendency to almost become hypnotized by our participation in these events. So the word hypnotized, I'm using very deliberately, because it gives a sense that we're participating in an unconscious way. And when we do this, what we're actually doing is we're training our brain that avoiding is beneficial, which then ironically provokes our system to make the anxiety even stronger so that we do even more avoiding. So we end up in this kind of vicious cycle where the anxiety becomes worse, making it even more difficult to face up to the situation. And if we look at the implications of this mechanism in today's environment, you know, I think to have our systems regularly jolted into a high state of alert, first of all, it's not a quality of life that most people would choose for themselves. And also there are health implications as well. Just one of which is that, you know, anxiety tends to dial our immune system down, which is exactly the opposite of what we would wish for at this moment. So I think in summary, you know, we need to find a different response in us rather than accepting that these feelings and behaviors are becoming part of some sort of a new normal in our lives.
Yeah. And from that side, you know, if we're going to respond to it, what can we do about that?
Well, so that's the big question, isn't it? So the starting point in all of this, I think, is to disconnect from this cycle that I've mentioned and to act with more awareness. Now, in practice, you know, what this means is carving out time for ourselves so that we can, you know, learn and, you know, identify more about our individual mechanism. And in general, I encourage people to see these challenges as an opportunity to learn about ourselves and to develop, not just for, you know, resolving the issue in the short term, but also for the longer term as well. So in other words, if we can increase our internal competencies, you know, we can lower our tendency to feel anxious, not just in this situation, but for other situations that will come up in the future as well. So in other words, we become more resilient.
Right. Okay, so you've touched on the word becoming a bit more resilient, and we've got to do these things. So what tips would you share to help you do these things and to be a little bit more resilient?
Well,
to put it bluntly.
indeed. So I think the first comment to make here, this is where the rubber hits the road, or there's some expression like that, right? So yeah. first thing to say is there's a lot of useful information, I think, out on the internet. So if you're prepared to do a bit of sifting through the information, there's a lot of interesting advice that you can get from there. Anything that I'm going to share here is purely based on my own personal experience. It's, you know, a few things that I found useful, and I share these in case they may be of use to other people as well. So tip number one, if you're still wondering if avoiding is an issue for you, a very simple experiment to do is to sit in a quiet room, no distractions, for between 5 and 10 minutes, and just put the attention on yourself and what's going on inside yourself. If over that time there's an uncomfortable feeling that starts to grow, might be an indication that there's some avoidance going on there. Maybe repeat the experiment one or two times and then see if you're motivated to want to take some action on it. So tip number two, grounding exercises. So grounding exercises help to calm us down and to feel safe. And the reason these exercises can be useful is because behind anxiety is a nervous system that at some point in the past, typically in the first few years of life, was frozen in a high state of alert. It's almost as if we're living with an inherent tendency to experience the world around us as not being safe. And so when we then find ourselves in situations such as COVID, which seem to confirm to us that our environment really isn't safe, then our response becomes exaggerated because of what was in our system, you know, from the past already. So the grounding exercises help to train our nervous system that actually we are safe, and they help to calm us down. Just one very simple example of this, but you can find other ones out on the internet, is the starting point is the breath, is our breathing. And it's to, in a very conscious way, breathe in and out, because often when we feel anxious, our breathing becomes restricted. So we're not actually taking in enough air. So the trick is to consciously breathe, particularly if we can do it from our stomach region, and we allow the outward breath to be a little bit longer than the inward breath. So that's the first step. The second step is to focus our attention on our body, because our body is a relatively solid, stable structure. And our bodies are also always in the present moment, which is unlike the mind of an anxious person, which tends to extrapolate thoughts into the future and to imagine the worst possible outcomes. So part of what this exercise is doing is it's bringing us into the present moment so that we're not imagining the worst. Now, specifically, how do we do this? Well, we can simply make a scan, an internal scan, from the top of our head down to the lower part of our body, in order to find a place in us that we easily connect with. So in other words, a place that feels safe. There may be some parts of our body that we connect with which don't feel safe. And those are probably places where we've stored some old traumas. So the trick here is to find a place that does feel safe. And a very simple example could be a finger. You know, fingers tend to be relatively trauma-free regions in us, yeah. Tip number three. Sorry, Andrew, go ahead. Yeah.
Unless you played rugby and you've broken a few.
Well, indeed. So great example. So for you, then, maybe the finger isn't the right location. So again, it's very
individual. No, it brings back happy memories.
Not breaking the finger, I
think. Which one I didn't break, yeah.
I think in my own case, I also broke a couple of fingers playing rugby. Yeah. Anyway, we digress.
We do.
So let's go to tip number three, tension release exercises, which you will find under a registered trademark on the internet called TRE. So these are a set of very simple exercises. I think there are seven of them in total. And they're pretty much designed for any body shape and also a number of physical restrictions. They can be carried out in very small spaces as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely something that can be done in the home, including small apartments. And what these exercises do is they provoke an intentional tremor in some of the muscles in our body, but they do it in a very controlled way. And what these tremors are doing is they're unwinding patterns of tension which are buried in the muscles that have accumulated over the years. And these tremors are actually similar to the tremors that you might have seen in animals when they've survived a stressful event. Again, you can go out on YouTube and you can see some examples of this. But one example that some people might be able to identify with is a cat that's been frightened. So maybe you've seen a cat that's been frightened by a dog. And after the dog's gone away, the cat shakes. And that shaking action is actually a very healthy response, because what the cat is doing is it's shaking off the excess energy from that event. And then all of a sudden, the cat will run away and it'll be fine. It'll stop shaking. Now, in principle, you know, the same thing happens in humans as well. But with humans, we tend to hold back on the shaking because we think that we shouldn't be shaking or that something's wrong with us. And actually what we're doing is we're holding this excess, this residual energy inside us, whereas it would be healthier just to allow the shaking to take place. So that's basically what these exercises are doing, is they're intentionally, in a very controlled way, shaking off, you know, some of the daily stresses and also some of the baggage material that we've accumulated from the past.
So obviously that's self-help, of which we then know that even if we put this information out, and even if we gave this to 100 people, probably 10 would only action them. So if we move from the self-help way of trying to handle the situation, how does a professional approach help the person in all of this?
Very good question. So I think, you know, this is where a lot of discipline or the word discipline comes to mind. You know, despite our best efforts and also maybe the best efforts of other people that have a good intentions towards us as well, we still may not be able to regularly break out of this cycle that I've mentioned earlier. You know, either I think we're not able to see the cycle just because we're too close to it, you know, we're in the box, or we get sucked into the cycle because, well, it's their design to protect us and make us feel safe. So in cases like this, it can be helpful to look for external support, particularly if, you know, it's with somebody that shares a similar personal experience, which may be related to your anxiety. Now, there are several types of support that people can seek out there. Obviously, what I'm going to say is speaking from the perspective of a coach. And I think for coaching, there are three things I'd like to highlight. So the first thing is, I think coaching is about providing I would say a supportive environment that helps to shine a light on people's inner experience. And this can be a really important enabler, allowing people to learn about their individual mechanism of how they do anxiety. Because at the end of the day, even though we generalize, we do it in a very individual way. And ideally, this should also lead to a buildup of resilience so that when we encounter anxiety in the future, you know, it's either softened or we don't experience it. I think the second point is coaching is very good, I find, at putting someone's challenge into a bigger context of their life. So in other words, it's not only about the anxiety. You know, anxiety is obviously one element, which is very important in the now, but it's one element of a much bigger picture of that person's life. And I think to remind somebody about their bigger picture, or to help them figure it out if they haven't already been able to do that, can be very motivating and also very, very empowering. And then thirdly, as a last point, I think it's about cultivating connection to ourselves and to our surroundings as well. So for example, by distilling out important values or untapped strengths, or learning how to effectively leverage our strengths to work through challenges. And I think the reason that this theme of connection is so important in the context of anxiety, I think the picture which has emerged about the origin of anxiety is that it's related to a disconnection or a rupture in the connection that we have with the surroundings around us that were supporting us. And typically this happens within the first few years of life and can even happen before we're born. And so the point is that if disconnection was the cause of anxiety, then reconnection can be an important part of the solution and moving forward.
And from your side, you've talked about their coaching in general. What about if it's coaching with you, and how do people connect with you?
I think for some people, it's important that they feel the coach can relate to their personal experience. So I tend to work with people from professional backgrounds, which because I've spent a number of years in industry myself, I've also had to juggle work life with family life. So I've got three sons. And of course, you know, you may have gathered now from one or two of my comments that I personally had to work through, you know, issues of anxiety and turning it into a, you could almost say, a more friendly travel companion.
It's one of those things. It's like loneliness. People don't admit it, but they suffer from it. And if they can quietly improve their life by reaching out to somebody, I think it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
And you're sensible enough, Michael, to know that if you can't help, you won't help. You know, which is equally important in what you're doing as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, if people are motivated to or curious to explore my coaching further, they can feel free to reach me on my email, which is simmonscoaching@gmail.com. So that's all one word. And I'll spell Simmons, S-I-M-M-O-N-D-S. And they can also give me a quick telephone call for a one-on-one discussion to see if they think it's worthwhile to go into more detail in a separate session.
Okay. And you'll be coming up with your new website in 2021. So obviously you'll keep the old Gmail account active.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. To be honest, I haven't needed the website up until now, but it's in construction and should be out in the next month or two.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Michael, for turning up. And please, everybody who's listening, if you do want to get in touch, you've got the information. We're also provided in the transcript and the show notes. And all I'd like to say is thank you very much, Michael, for attending. And I'll probably be talking to you again in a few more months' time.
Yep.
If this COVID thing keeps dragging on.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Exactly. All right.
Okay. Cheers, mate. Cheers, Andrew.
Take care.
Thanks.
Have a good
Bye-bye.
Christmas. Bye.
If you enjoyed listening to In the Loop, we'd love you to subscribe or simply share with a friend. Until next time.